Hello everyone, it's Tim Emerson from Kuan Yin Healing, and I am delighted to be here today with Swami Tirtha. Swami, who's also known as the Orange Cowboy, is a number one best-selling author on Amazon for the Ayurveda Encyclopedia, which has 30,000 copies in print. He's presented to the White House Commission on Alternative Medicine. His speaking clients include medical universities, such as John Hopkins. He's also known as the Hip Guru because he's a monk, a shaman, a healer, with more than four decades of teaching wellness and consciousness. His emphasis on instant breakthroughs in wellness and energy, creativity, vision, and communication skills that empower leaders and employees to improve all aspects of their lives. He also teaches meditation for business and personal growth. And he is a joy expert. He uses his intuitive gifts to help people find and grow their inner joy, which translate to wellness and success in relationships and career. And today, he's going to be talking about developing joy, the secret of healing emotional challenges. So, Swami, are you with us?
Joy, 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 Tim.
I'm so glad you're here. Okay, let's have some fun. So, you know, it's I think one of the things that people might think at first if they're, tuning into this program is to think, well, you know, all this happy and joy stuff, that's fine for people like Tim and Swami who've got it all together, but, you know, my life is a train wreck and I've got a lot to be upset about. So how do we get from those sorts of places to back to a place of joy?
Well, this is probably the best question and the most asked question that I get, Tim, because, well, first off, developing joy is a daily exercise, like eating and breathing. And one, I could easily, well, I do get face challenges, but I see them in better lights as opposed to problems. But really, my life started out, quite frankly, very dismal. When I was a child, probably around fourth grade, I started to get these very disturbing dreams at night that my parents were not my parents, and I'd have all these other parents. And the dreams kept changing over my childhood, but it was always that I was separated from my parents. And then one day when I was about 17, my parents were in a car accident and they died, and I wound up with several sets of parents. And so being a medium, being a psychic, being intuitive, people say, oh, that's a great gift. I didn't think so, Tim, because it was almost taunting. It was saying, this is going to happen and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
But really, aside from the grief, which was obviously strong, I honestly think that those messages, those visions, the psychic mediumships that I was getting saved my life, because it sort of prepared me for something who would have ever thought about even. And that's when I started saying, well, what was happening? Who was that? Who told me that? Mm. How did I do that? And so it really, the upside, as a friend of mine wrote a book, The Upside to the Downside, or something like that. The upside to that down experience is that it got me to focus and jump into meditation and self-discovery and mystical studies. And that starting of the meditation actually gave me a little peace, a little respite from the grief. And the best way I can describe meditation, Tim, is you're standing out in the rain and you go walk on your porch under the awning, you haven't stopped the rain, but you stopped getting wet. And so when I started to meditate, suddenly it was like I stepped into my heart. And even though all this grief was raining around me, I had a little bit of space where I could breathe and feel my heart and feel some peace. And so to answer your question, what I said at that point is if meditation can make me feel more peaceful from such a tragedy, it could help anybody. And that's when I decided that's what I'm going to do with my life. And I became a meditation teacher and a yoga teacher. And then later on developed all those other gifts that you talked about. So over the last 40 some odd years, I've been helping people with quite serious or mild emotional issues.
You know, it's really interesting that, I actually started as a professional musician. And like, how do I get from that to this, right? It was in a very, I didn't have the trauma that you had, but it was a very similar way, because as a music student, you know, the pressure on you to perform at a professional level is the only thing that's expected is that you be absolutely perfect on demand under pressure. And especially when you're young, you feel that. And so there are various ways that people deal with that. But one of the ways is with meditation. And so not out of any specific seeking, there were actually, generally among us, there were two camps. There were the TM people and the Zen people. And in a very childish way, we didn't really like the TM people, so we went for Zen. And it was really as simple and as utilitarian as that. But similarly, you know, once you started practicing, then I started reading Zen and the Art of Maintenance what's the sword? The geez.
Motorcycle?
No, that one, but that's not the one I meant. Zen and the Art of Archery. And that's set the foundation for a focus, and kept noticing that other things other than calmness on stage were happening, and started following that path.
It's really an amazing tool. I more recently wrote a book called The Stress-Free College Student to help college students with exactly what you were just saying, stress on-demand pressure. And 80%, some of the research says 60 to 80% of the college students are overly burdened with stress, which leads to health issues and depression and suicides and grade point averages falling. And there are such simple little things that can be done to feel better. I specialize in instant changes. And so within 20 seconds when I perform at the colleges, I get them to feel better in 20 seconds. And they go, holy cow. So everybody could benefit. I think these days, probably more so than in our day, the pressures are bigger and better.
Yeah, and I think it's to pick up on the theme we started with, it's easy to think, well, you know, that's okay for others, but it's difficult for me, or if you had my life and those sorts of things. And I'm always sympathetic to that. It's easy to think, oh, yeah, sure, instant changes. But, for example, I recently, just a week or so ago, saw Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Oh, yeah.
And in one song, he changed that audience.
Yes.
And we talked about that for the rest of we went there to hear some pretty tunes, and instead we all had a transformational experience. And it was very quick and very deliberate on his part. It was an amazing
experience.
What
was the song? What was the name of the song, by the way?
Actually, it was, forget the title, but it's a song about how music can change people.
And
he started talking about the politics of things, and he just said, and he started right off with it, you know. How many of you came in here with maybe this level of standoffishness? What is your level of standoffishness now? And it had dropped. And, you know, he changed us into a group of people in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then kept going.
Yeah.
We went in there all concerned about the world and our stress and our problems. And we left there laughing and smiling and hugging each other.
You bring up such a great point, Tim, because I think people have a misconception of what meditation is, and they think they have to push thoughts out of their head, they have to sit in the dark for an hour, or go to India, or Tibet, but the reality is anything that makes you happy, or calmer, or joyful, is meditation, and it could be music, it could be art, it could be dog. It could be going out in nature. All of this is different forms of meditation. Some people feel better helping foundations, volunteering.
Yeah.
All kinds of ways.
I have a handout that I'll share with people. 10 tips for people who can't meditate.
And, right.
And it's like you, the first thing I tell people when they say, I just can't meditate, I tried it, I can't turn off my thoughts. I just keep, thinking new thoughts all the time. And I tell them, congratulations, you're meditating.
That's it, exactly.
you're noticing your thoughts. We might refine your technique from here, but you're doing it.
I have a course I call it Beginner's Meditation with Advanced Results. I teach people literally to feel better within 20 seconds. And I just did, my most recent course was in Lilydale up in New York, a mediumship school. And they loved it. They had them dancing and magic happening. And just, it was really, really, they laughed and they cried. Some of the people, they talked about their need to forgive. And that's what their meditation was on. And they cried tears of joy because their hearts melted and the pain of the lack of forgiveness disappeared. And one gal, she meditated on healing family relationships, and it was a 3-hour course that I teach. And at the very end of the course, she got an email from the very person she was meditating on inviting her to a family picnic. You can't make this stuff up. It's so
right,
cool.
Right. This is a really interesting, I've noticed the same thing. If I'm dealing with something difficult, I actually do a meditation where I really focus on expanding my grounding and understanding. And when I do that, the other people get more understanding.
Yeah.
I can't explain it either.
I think we are all quite intuitive. They talk about mother's intuition. And I think we really all have an intuition. And if we're angry, if we're happy, even if we're not physically in touch with our friends or family, they're feeling it in some way. Emotions have no boundaries.
So would you help walk people through? Somebody's feeling upset about or overwhelmed or whatever emotional challenge they're going through. So how do they move from there to meditation to feeling better and maybe even resolving these differences?
Sure. This is the fun part, in a sense, because it's kind of like a workshop. We're not just talking theory.
Yeah.
I think the first thing that I noticed, that the biggest myth that people want to, that's hanging them up from being happy and clearing out their emotional challenges, is to realize that no matter who the other person is or whatever the health condition is, well, let's just start with a person. It's a little bit easier. Let's say you have an emotional challenge because of a spouse or a lover or a boss or an employee. The first thing to understand is it's not about them. They don't give them your power. They can't control how you feel. So people automatically want to blame the other person. Oh, they're so this or they're so that. They won't let me. They make me feel.
Right.
So these are all words that fall under the pattern heading of the victim. I'm a victim. I can't do anything. That person controls me. And that is the secret key. If we can just put that aside for a moment and experiment with instead of a victim, a leader role, that we lead ourselves and say, you know what? I don't care what other people think or say or do. I'm going to make the best life for me because I'm good enough, I'm worthy enough, and that's my choice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's simple to say, and then the exercise, like going to the gym, it takes exercise to build the brain muscle or the heart muscle for that.
Yeah, I don't think we usually think of building our brain or our heart muscles, do we?
Well, we're an instant society. We had instant oatmeal, instant oatmeal, Instagram, instant gratification. And we can really have instant healing and instant joy. Once it really falls down, Tim, I feel, to self-worth. And there's not a lot of self-worth building out in the world for us. It's usually up to us to go to our own inside self-worth gym or spa and pamper ourselves. People are so guilty to be happy. There was research that found that people are actually guilty when they're happy, and women are more guilty about feeling happy than men. So with that little piece of scientific finding, it's a good wake-up call to say, you know what? I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to eat healthy. I'm going to take a walk every day. I'm going to do things that I love to do instead of what other people tell me I should be doing. This is really a very... These are meditations. These are ways to heal emotional challenges by replacing victim thoughts with hero thoughts. I'm my own superhero. I do this with children a lot. I have them draw pictures of their best quality. And one girl would say, said, oh, I love being around other people and making them happy. So we made a superhero for her. Mm-hmm. Another person loved that. So we find our best qualities. Nobody is really going to be our cheerleader as well as we can. And that's really the only work we have, is to promote ourselves, to take care of ourselves, to love ourselves. And you'd be surprised. Now, you wouldn't be surprised, but some people who haven't tried it would be surprised how quickly you start to get those positive reactions from other people. Or new people come into your life who think and treat you that way, who respect you more.
I love the idea of the superhero. It reminds me of the hero's journey, where we are all the hero of our own story.
Right.
But the hero at the beginning of the story doesn't know he or she is the hero.
Yeah. There's a wonderful saying that look around you at the 5 or 10 people closest to you. Look at how their self-worth is. Look at, are they doing things that make them happy? Are they doing things that bring them a decent income? And whoever they are, that is going to tell you who you are in the moment. And then if you're not happy with that, make a change for yourself.
Right.
So it is just choosing a life for yourself. Even if it's a few minutes a day, you know, somebody may say, and quite rightly so, but I've got 2 kids, I've got 2 jobs, I've got a spouse who's sick. There's always some time. And the first thing I do, Tim, when I wake up in the morning, just as I'm starting to realize I'm waking up, I now smile. I tell myself I love myself. I tell myself I'm worthy. And I think of things I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for my health. I'm grateful for a roof over my head. I'm grateful I live out in nature. I'm grateful for my friends and family who I love and who love me. Things like that. And boy, you know, that starts my day. And then if you're driving to work in a car, in a train or bus, you have a few minutes to smile, to do those things again. I'm worthy. I love myself. What are the things I'd love to do with my life? If you don't love your job, think about jobs you'd love. And just start thinking like that. So there's always a few minutes every day. And research shows that if we do something for 21 days, we create new habits. So even if we think 2 minutes a day or 2 minutes 5 times a day about our happiness, our joy, our hero role, and then in 21 days, less than a month, we're more naturally habituated, well, I need to be habituated to speaking better, more habituated to being our own hero, or being our own best advocate, being more joyful.
So you actually start your day by scheduling joy in the morning first thing.
I actually do. It is there before I open my eyes. And then on some days, if I did a lot of physical labor the day before, if I stacked wood or something, I'll find that I'll say, you know what, let me massage my shoulders a little bit, let me massage my legs. And it's just pampering myself. I call it constructive pampering. It's a great way to start the day.
I think one thing that I'd like to contribute here about that is, and also about meditation, is that it's not about being a power meditator or being a power joyful person. My first powerful lesson in meditation is that the secret to meditation, however shortly, and the secret to scheduling joy, however shortly, however briefly, however lamely you do it, the secret is to do it every single day. And if you do that, it will build in ways you cannot imagine until you've done it.
That goes to the 21 days principle.
Right. For meditation, I actually push people to do 90 days. I'm putting together actually a program. And it's exactly that. So many people I talk to say, oh yeah, I used to meditate, or I tried that once. It's got to be... it's got to be a priority in the sense that it's the first thing we do.
There's a joke. It says, meditate 10 minutes a day, but if you don't have time, meditate an hour a day.
Right. It's true. I think there are maybe more people who can relate to this from an exercise standpoint. When I first started running every day, I had to cram it in. And then once you realize the benefits, and many, many people say something to this, where they go to the gym or whatever, is that when they get busy, they realize that exercise is the one thing they can't cut because it's essential to keeping them going. And this would fit into that category.
Yeah, I have clients who are people pleasers, and they run themselves down. And I say, if you don't stop and put gas in your car, you'll never get to your client's or your friend's place. It's the same thing. If you don't put a little love and energy inside your own body, how are you going to have any to give anybody else?
Yeah. So this is an important thing, and we have, maybe you can speak to this. We have, busy, busy, crammed lives, but it's... it is like that, isn't it? We complain. I don't know, how do I handle stress? How do I handle overwhelm? But it's like trying to grow a tree that's all branches but no roots. Right. I'm too busy. I just don't have time to put gas in the car this week. Well, you can't say that.
I want a nice apple, so I'm going to paint them red before I pick them off the tree. But if you didn't put fertilizer in the ground, how good is it? Or, here's the one that families can relate to. You invest in your children. How much time do you spend raising children, teaching them how to live, be a good person, paying for their educational especially college and things like that, or taking time from your business to spend with your family. Now, most people will say, well, that's not a sacrifice. That's the best part of my life.
Right.
And yet it makes us better in the world. And the children, they're not, it takes them 18 to 25 some odd years before they become productive members of society, so to speak. So, we're waiting that many years. We're investing that many years. So investing in our health, investing in our self-worth, investing in our joy, it's okay if we don't see results right away, but we see results right away.
Right, right. Yeah, you can feel it. And I think our instant culture tends to be, it helps me, humor helps me a great deal in these sorts of things. It might help others. So, for example, when I first joined a gym, because I found out that, as I aged, that my body didn't respond as quickly to the things it used to respond to. And So I had to up my game a little. And I came back the first week, and the first thing the gym taught me was that I should have joined a gym a lot earlier. And but at the end of the first week, my partner asked me, "So how's it going?" And I said, "I don't know. I haven't seen any really huge results yet." After a week. And so I'll joke about these things, but I could, but I could feel the difference. And the same thing is true with a lot of things. I think we tend to say things like, geez, I'm not good at this or that. When I go into a networking event, every single time I go to it, there's that part in my head that says, what am I doing here? Nobody's going to be interested. It's just, I feel so uncomfortable. And then, fortunately, because I have a better nature and good teachers, there's the other voices in my head that say, "Now, do you know that? Is that really true? Haven't you had great conversations every single time we've played this game before? Haven't you helped a lot of people? Do you think these people here deserve some help?" And I'm like, okay, I'll go to the networking event. And then I have great conversations and make connections, and it's all great. But but I dance this dance every time. The way that I deal with it, though, is that I can step back and laugh at myself. I said, "You're being ridiculous. And by the way, look around. Nobody here is comfortable. go make them feel better."
You raise a really good point, building on everything we've talked about, because I'll speak for some of the people now, that as you were speaking for them before, they can say now, okay, we understand that we could meditate whenever we need, and we could love ourselves, but life's really hard. And then I get discouraged, even with all the tips you're giving me. So you're providing the solution to the next question, the next level, which is, anytime we step up to the plate and try to make our lives better, live a vision, grow a vision, develop something, it's going to be scary. It's going to be tougher because it's brand new. But we don't stop because it's the solution. The alternative to not doing is falling backwards into more of what we want to get out of.
Right.
Meaning if we're in an emotional funk, emotional challenge, and we don't do nothing, it only gets worse. And if we try, then we have what I call healthy anxiety or healthy nervousness. And that's the good stuff. There are people, you have to be kind of around my age. Back in the dinosaur age, there was a comedian on TV called Red Skelton in the 1960s.
Oh.
He had his own TV show. He was hilarious. And before every TV show, he threw up out of being nervous.
Wow.
And we need a little bit of that nervousness. We don't need that much, but to get our juices flowing, to get us to raise up to the level of joy or we're going to help people. Oh, that's exciting. So we get it more because we're gaining the energy, but we label it as something bad. We need more energy to do something new.
Right.
So for people who say, "Oh, when I try to do this, I get nervous, it takes so long." And the second time, it's quicker, half the time.
Right.
The third, fourth time, it's a breeze. And like we talked about before, in 21 days, it's a habit. In 90 days, you're practically a master of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mentioned to a colleague that I'm not comfortable with networking, and she said, "You? I thought you were great at it." it looks different from the outside than the inside.
It's great to have friends and feedback, and actually that's another point people can do is find like-minded people and support one another.
Yeah.
As you build your dreams.
A couple of things to share on this that I think echo what you were saying when, going back to music performance days, I remember students asking me, "So how do you get over being nervous, when you're performing?"
Right.
And I said, "Well, there is one surefire way to make sure you won't be nervous when you're performing, and that's to totally not give a shit." But if you care, you're going to be nervous.
Right.
So, you're just going to have to work your way through that. and remember why you're doing that. And the other about new experiences is that I still remember this, and I laugh at myself every single time. I remember saying to my marketing coach, Robert Middleton, I said, "I'm just not good at that, Robert." And he said, "Tim, nobody's good at something they've never done before." And I thought,
right.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
That, and now you raise yet another exciting point for people. The other reason we're so afraid to do new things is the fear of making a mistake.
Oh, no, not that.
And in a sense, if you look, another great way to succeed and come out of your emotional challenges is to read the biographies of people, famous people, who've gone through the same challenges in their life. And they say, if you're not making mistakes, you're not even trying.
Yeah.
And almost to the fact that you should schedule mistakes in your day, all kinds of amazing discoveries have come from mistakes. Even what's that woman, the person who discovered penicillin, it was a mistake. They left something out.
Fleming.
And then they saw the bacteria grow.
Yeah.
And they said, oh. Yeah, a lot of scientific discoveries came from mistakes.
Yeah. Sticky notes.
Musical.
Was a glue that totally failed.
Yeah. So if you're afraid because you're afraid of making mistakes, well, throw that myth out too.
Right. Yeah, there are quite a few people who point out if you want to grow faster, fail bigger and faster.
Wonderful quote.
Say
that again.
Fail bigger and faster. If you want to make faster progress, fail bigger and faster.
I love it. I love that.
There's I think it was Ken Blanchard who pointed out, he was working with a company and they were helping them hire better managers. And one of the things they asked these people was, give me an example of a mistake in the last year that you've made in your past management position. And the people who said, you know, honestly, things have run very smoothly around here. I can't really point to any big mistakes. They did not invite them back for a second interview. And it said the reason is there's one or two things they would say that. The first is that they're lying. Or the second is that they haven't done much. Or they have messed something up in the course of a year. And, of course, what they really wanted to know was, what did you do after that? Not what they did in the mistake. When I learned Tai Chi from Master T.T. Liang years ago, a very short 90-year-old man who could knock you on your ass easily. And we asked him one time, Master Liang, if there is just one secret to learning Tai Chi, what would you say it is? And he said, fail 1,000 times.
Wow. That's amazing.
Get up, get knocked down. It's the fastest way to learn.
In fact, I'm studying something called Hapkido right now with Robert Clanson, who I believe you know.
Yes.
And wonderful. They actually, I just started. Yeah, he's a great guy. And they teach you how to fall. There's a way to fall so you don't get hurt. So they're expecting mistakes, but here's a way to minimize them.
Yeah.
Reduce the negative impact of it.
I once got free karate lessons for a year from an assistant or dean who had come through for an interim position who was a black belt of some degree. And the reason was that because of my Tai Chi experience, I could be the demo because I know I can do anything and you'll just roll out of it. So it was a great demo.
All right. There's another secret to coming out of emotional challenges and standing up for yourself, you know, whether it's public speaking or starting a new career, whatever it is, when that fear comes, what helps me is two things. One is if I start to get a little too nervous, I say, wait a second, I'm doing this for fun, for joy, so I'm I'm just not going to allow that level of discomfort to bother me, because I'm here for the joy. I'm not here for the discomfort.
Right.
The second part of that is, and what I'm doing is we're here to help people. So it's not about me. And
right.
That takes a huge weight off of me. It's not
right.
about me. It's
right.
I'm here for them. If I'm here for them and I'm nervous and I'm not helping them, it's all, and that's my own ego in a low self-esteem way. So if I want to be happy and help people, that takes away a ton of nervousness.
You know, that's an important point. It's somebody asked me just a week ago, not as a client, it was a social gathering, but we were talking about emotional challenges, coincidentally enough, and said, what do you do? And I, we all shared, and I shared half a dozen things that I do, the last point, though, speaks to what you're saying. I said, you know, and if none of that works, I know I'm not doing enough service work. That if I go out and help other people, that I'll get out of myself and out of that rut, and things will start working again.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That reminds me of something that I do. I'm a big proponent of being yourself, being authentic, being unique, which really frightens people. Everybody wants to be like everybody else.
It takes courage.
And if you're like everybody else, that's not fun.
Yeah.
That's pretty emotionally stilting. And so, in fact, there's a wonderful quote that says, be yourself, everybody else is already taken.
But it can be a bit of a challenge, though. I remember years ago being told, you know, just be yourself. And the irony of this, but I remember really conscious thinking, what am I supposed to do? Even worse, just, you know, remember to love yourself. I'm like, what do you mean? How do I love myself? What's the procedure? I really wrestled with both of those things for quite a while.
Yes. This is brilliant conversation, because you're bringing up really important points that I know people have these questions, because they ask me all the time. The first is love. Love is so generic. And how could I relax? How could I love myself? The way that I found it may help you or somebody else is I turn it into gratitude. What am I grateful for? And that makes me love myself more, makes me calmer. There are these machines that tell you what your EEG is, or your heart rate variability, things that your biofeedback, that's the word I was looking for. And I always used to get nervous putting on the biofeedback machine. My thoughts would go to, oh my God, well, what will happen if I don't show this good? I could never calm down until I started to think about things I was grateful for.
Yeah.
And that's how I found love. So
yeah.
Love was so generic. Gratitude was so specific. That helped me. And in terms of being myself, what I would find is I would say things. I think for myself a lot. And I'll say things and people say, that's crazy. And that can't happen. That's not possible. But I've wound up succeeding. You know, like you said, I wrote this book with no writing experience, with no business experience. It became an Amazon number one bestseller. How is that possible? You know, I had nothing going for me that would indicate I could do that.
Right.
And so now when people tell me I'm crazy, it means I know I'm being authentically me.
Yeah.
And I say, oh, thank you. I'll put one more crazy bag. I'll put it here on my chest with all the other crazy bags.
It's like the T-shirt. I'm in my own world, but it's okay. They know me there, I'd say.
I love that.
Yeah, and the same lines, one of the things I'll share with people is to remember your why. You know, a friend of mine recently lost his mom, and He does some part-time teaching, and she had taught for years. And they were at dinner, and he was he actually mentioned this at her funeral. He was complaining about the college kids he was working with, and they don't do this, and they don't do this, and the administration's this, and she goes, "So, what is it that you do?" And he goes, "What do you mean, what do I do?" He says, "What is it you do?" He says, "You know, I grind the classes, the lectures, I grade papers." She goes, no, what is it you do? And now we're starting to get a little annoyed, right? And and they go through with this, and finally he's talking to his mom, so he's trying to keep it in check, but he's getting a little bit angry, and finally he says, "I meet them where they are and move them along." And she goes, "That's what you do."
Yeah.
And that's a different reason to go to work every day than here we go again.
It's a specific.
Yeah.
That's a great story. And I hear people, because they've asked me this at this point in the conversation, they say, "Yeah, but how do you do it? How do you feel your way? How do you be, if you're authentic, there's no map out there. There's no one to follow." And there are mentors, like you said, that can support you, but you ultimately have to create your own map.
Yeah.
And so the solution to this question, which is a really valid question, is you have to kind of feel your way through it. You're inventing something brand new that only you're going to do. People say, "Well, I'll tell people an idea," and they'll say, I never read that in a book." And I said, "Well, I never wrote that book yet." So feel your way through it. It's okay to not know. That's another thing with mistakes. It's okay to not know. Experiment. Try. Feel your way through it. Because our emotions, our intuition, really never fail us.
So, ironically enough, the way through emotional challenges is through feeling your way through them.
That's right.
Use your emotions to Interesting. I know certainly it was a revelation to me the day that I realized, you know what? Let go of this need to understand everything. It's okay.
Right. Oh, I've taken that even a step further lately. I know nothing, and I just align myself. I connect myself with what I call my spirit guides, my angels, and say, "Please talk through me, because you guys continually over my life have known better choices than I would have made."
Yeah.
And so when I make the choices you suggest, I'm so much happier. I help so many more people. And I'm a public speaker. I'm in Toastmasters, which is a group that teaches you how to be a better speaker and leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to learn over the past 5 years, just show up. You know, you're caring. You care about people. And so you're going to say something out of caring. It's not so important what you say. So I come up with a care in my heart, and I open my mouth, and I'm not sure what's going to come out other than I care about them. And I care about a certain topic. And so I don't even know what I'm going to say, but I know that I care, and I know about caring. And then the rest comes out on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know. I have nothing in my brain.
Right. One thing I hear a lot is I'll get questions like, what do I do to feel that I'm about my self-worth? How do I do to feel that I'm worthy of healing? Or people who are actually, they may not use this word, but I can see that they're actually afraid of healing. That they're, it's a prison and it's uncomfortable and it hurts, but they're camped out there.
Yeah. It's familiar.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. Honestly, Tim, that's a tough one because there's some sort of programming there that says, don't be happy or else you will get wiped out. Or life is about war. And if you become happy, somebody will beat you. And So that takes some of the programmings that we've talked about today. There's a wonderful study, or maybe there's even more than one study, that even if you are not happy and you just force a smile, you just put a grin on your face, that the brain starts secreting healing, happy hormones that start to flow through your body. And so even if you can't emotionally get to a happy place, fake it. Fake it till you make it, because it's now scientifically proven you can get to where you want to go by faking the smile.
Well, it's how children learn, isn't it? They fake it until they actually can do it.
Imagination.
I'm having a lot of fun watching. We have barn swallows, and they've gone through a couple of hatchings already. And watching they're fantastic flyers, but watching the fledglings learn to fly is a trip. And there's a clothesline right outside. Of course, this is something birds do with ease all the time, perch on the clothesline. But to watch the different approaches, like there's not one way. They each have their own. So there was a fledgling out one day, you know, teetering back and forth. You could almost hear him say, look, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. See, I'm on the line. See, I got it. You know? I'm thinking this little guy's going to be sore later. And another one, you know, was like, wow, he's perched so perfectly. And I look and his belly is on the line. He's like, like, that's not quite it, but, but this is how we learn. I remember an educator giving a speech years ago about evaluation. It says, you know, as an educator, I can tell you the best way to teach children to walk. So they get up and they pull themselves up by the sofa or something, and you say, come on, and they take a couple of weak wobbly steps and then they fall flat. And so as a professional educator, I can tell you the thing to do is to pick that child up, spank him, and give him an F and send him to a year of remedial walking. Now, can you imagine? Nobody would ever learn to walk, but people do learn to walk. And you know, so why do we do this to ourselves?
Yes. That's part of, you know, that brings up the whole educational system, which was a robotic industrial system for the industrial era. And fortunately, I mean, we all know the education system is breaking down. And it's because we are ending the industrial revolution and we're coming into a more of like a virtual or a space revolution where, like, we have cloud computing now. There's abundance. Everybody can be educated anywhere in the world with a computer or smartphone. And the needs are different. The robots, we don't have to be robotic anymore. The robots are now smart enough that we can get back to love and creativity and helping the rest of the world. You know, here in America, we're pretty fortunate, even those who have emotional challenges compared to people who live on less than a dollar a day around the world. And helping others is another actual way to feel better and to get out of our emotional whatever, because as soon as we see somebody's worse off than us, I stop my self-pity, and I realize I can do something to help this person, even if it's simply, good morning, oh, what a lovely shirt.
Right.
How are
you
today?
Right.
Something that simple is helping. Because that's another question that people have. Well, what can I do? I'm just one person. How can I help the world? Well, just from, like you said, from wherever you are, do something nice for somebody. Smile. If you smile, that's going to make people feel better.
Right.
So if you take it to the next step and say good morning, that's the next best thing you could do. There's always something. We always have the power. We're always empowered because we have our heart and we have our love.
So if we're feeling stressed and overwhelmed, and we add helping others to our schedule, and we schedule in some joy time, and like, oh my God, now I feel worse than ever. How do we?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we don't have to schedule helping others, because if you're standing online, I remember I was standing online in a Home Depot once. I was like three people back, and the woman behind the cash register was in the worst mood. And I said, well, I certainly don't want her to be that way with me. So I started sending her love. Nobody knew. I just said, I hope you feel some love. I hope you feel some peace. Whatever's troubling you, I hope it could just ease up and it's, you know, you don't see it that badly. And when I got, so I was like, the line sped up as opposed to stayed slow. So it's the opposite of scheduling time. I saved time. And when I got to her, we started laughing and cracking jokes, and it was just a nice thing to do. So helping in the midst of our day saves our day time and makes our day better and makes others' days better.
Nice. As well as bringing understanding and love. I remember in a famous speech that novelist David Foster Wallace gave, he talks, you know, that woman screaming at her kid in the checkout line is, maybe she's been up for three nights straight holding the hand of a loved one dying of cancer. It's like, you know, yeah. you don't know. I remember hearing something Michael Beckwith said once we talk about manifestation being, bring your thoughts together and concentrate and to bring it into manifestation. He goes, the Creator has done this with every one of you. That's how important you are.
Yeah.
That concentrated that thought to bring you into being. And something you said earlier reminded me of something Richard Bach wrote. What if the divine came to you and you said, so what's your plan for me? What should I do? And he said, be happy. Would you have a clue what to do? And
yeah.
That was, I thought about that for months when I first read that.
He's a great author. I like him. I like his books. Yeah. Everything we've talked about comes down to one thing. Feel your heart. Love your heart. Appreciate yourself. And in doing that, you automatically start. Others feel that. You know, the expression, my cup runneth over. If you're creating happiness inside of you, with your chemical hormones of health and happiness of taking over your body, people are going to see that, and they're going to go, holy, they're going to get inspired. They're going to get happy. You know, laughter is infectious.
Yeah.
So it only, because starting anything seems daunting, this is a great thing to start because it gets easier exponentially, more joyful, more healthy, more creative, more meaningful, more purposeful. You know, a lot of people have emotional challenges because they don't feel purpose in their life, as you alluded to earlier.
Right.
And joy is the first purpose. Self-love is the first purpose. And everything just sort of branches out from that. So if you only remember one thing from our talk today, folks, love yourself. Pat yourself on the back and say, good job, man. I do that with my clients, literally. I make them pat themselves on their back, and they feel a shift in their energy. That's how fast it happens.
Yeah,
okay, I feel crazy.
I know. It's a coach, Ryan Eliason, who has a system for results, and the last step is celebration, and he never forgets that step. That's always this important step in the process. You alluded to something earlier along the same lines that, you know, I once thought that once everything pulled together, then I could feel gratitude, and I gradually came to see that no, gratitude was the first step.
Right. As close to that is celebration.
Yeah.
So the angels told me in 2010 that basically 2012, when that was all that big to do about the Mayan calendar ending and all that, they said, this is the age of celebration. We're leaving the age of industrial age, and we're coming into the age of celebration. So the work, quote, I'm putting that word in quotes, the work is to celebrate. So my career, I've tweaked my career, so I'm a joy expert after 40 years, helping people celebrate their lives, because that's the best medicine. Beautiful. Instantly, when you're happy, your hormones start producing healthy hormones, and people get better. Your people get emotionally better, happier. Things are not as bad as they seem usually, and so celebrating. And specifically, this is so, here's a specific, not a general idea. Let's say this was a week for you, it was a tough week, mm-hmm. and you got through the week. Celebrate.
Yeah.
You know, if you have some money, go out for dinner. If you don't, make a little special something at home, or light a candle, or pat yourself on the back, or sit on the porch, and take the time to celebrate every single victory. It really makes it easier to go on the next day and to be more happy and more successful. So celebrate everything, even if it's I made it through the day, even if it's I avoided that cigarette today, or I didn't have that drink, or I stayed away from that sugar today, or whatever.
Yeah.
Or I went to the gym today, or I said hello to somebody today, or I told myself I love myself today.
Yeah.
Celebrate it all.
I think sometimes the things that stops people is they're trying to move the mountain all in one shovel load. And it can be very small steps, and those are powerful.
I think it has to be small steps.
Right.
But the steps get bigger as we get stronger, more experienced.
I have a property in Madison County. It's in the middle of just a gorgeous, gorgeous forest. And that's a property that I bought barely when I was a starving artist. It was a burnout cornfield. I planted every one of those trees as seedlings. There were 10 cents a tree, I think, from the state. And that's a constant reminder to me of the power of taking small steps. You know, this is a place I would not be able to afford if I were just to buy it in its current state. But I was able to create it for 10 cents a tree in time.
That's beautiful, yeah. And nature, you know, you plant the seed, it doesn't instantly pop up as a tree. It takes some years. And doing that for yourself, you've improved the land, and the trees are improving the air. So it's a win-win all around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
And the other thing that I touched on before when I talked about like-minded people is you don't have to do this alone. Find a community. Tim and I have recently met, and we're now kind of a community. We're part of a community.
Yes.
And we help one another. We inspire one another. The community is, I think, a very big goal. I feel very strongly that it's a goal that all of us need emotionally, quite frankly.
Right.
So emotionally healthy is to have a healthy people who have healthy emotions or are striving for healthy emotions to be in a community together.
I think that's a really important point. And people in a community, people will pick you up on the days that you forget whether you need it or not. You know, I know, you know, where a lot of the things we're talking about are things that I help people with in my own healing work in various ways. And yet at the same time, you know, for people listening, every time I talk to Swami, and I'm not coming to this in any kind of a upset mode, but I feel lifted and inspired every time we chat. And that's what we do for each other, all of us, or simple ways. I was recently invited to join the Rotarians, and aside from meeting a whole bunch of interesting people that I would normally not get to travel with, it's if some week I forget ways to be of service. There's a room full of Rotarians with all kinds of opportunities to step up and help other people. I won't have to think of them. I just have to say yes here and there. So, you know, and that all comes from the power of community. I think it may have been Deepak Chopra in one of his many books who pointed out, every people you meet, give them a gift. It could be a flower, it could be a smile. I recently heard an interview with a fascinating guy. He runs a business called Hello, My Name is Scott. Have you ever heard of him?
No, Scott
became famous because when he was in college, he started wearing a name tag 24/7.
Huh.
And oddly, instead of learning by name, they all said, oh yeah, the name tag guy. But but he has, he's still a very young man. He's in his late 20s maybe at this point. But he's written like 8 books and all about approachability and about, it's a very automatic thing. Just by wearing his name tag, he invites, you know, people and invites chances to help and invites conversations. You know, you go to, you're in the checkout line and you hand the cashier your corporate card, and it says, "Hello, my name is Scott." It's going to spark a conversation.
I wear all orange, partly because I'm a monk and partly because it's the color of joy for me. And boy, does that, and people stop me in New York City and said, "Thank you for bringing color to my life today."
Nice.
You get all, when you're unique, when you're an individual, people will come up and tell you how much they appreciate whatever your uniqueness is.
Nice. Beautiful. Well, folks, wow, that was a quick hour.
That's it.
You can learn more about Swami and his work at his website, orangecowboy.com. And if you go there, he actually he has a free gift. It's a MP3 meditation download. We were joking before the call that if you can't afford your own Tibetan bowl, you can here you can have your own copy of a Tibetan bowl, a singing bowl, playing for you.
There's always solutions.
So, thank you so much for participating and sharing.
Thank you for having me, great.
Any great parting words, last words?
Joy, joy, joy.
3 good ones. All right. So, thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to the next time we speak.
Thank you, Tim. Blessings and joy.
Yep. Take care. Oh, what a fun interview. I do. I feel inspired and smiley and laughing every time I talk to Swami. He's just a wonderful, wonderful character. So, he talked right from the start about joy and meditation and moving past challenges right there. You know, that... And it's not that we exist on some otherworldly plane above the problems that other people have, that we shared, I think, at various points, both of us, about some of the challenges we face. And he faced some severe ones as a child and mentioned that, you know, he gets these challenges, but he sees them in a better light and helps other people to do that as well. As a child, he had very disturbing dreams that he had the wrong parents, was going to be separated. And then at 17, actually, his parents died. And he had several sets of parents from that. But the experience did help him prepare. So he says the secret to seeing the upside of things is focus and meditation. And that's what started his mystical studies. And that really was a theme here, the importance of that focus and meditation. he has the single most fun description of meditation. It's like you're still standing in the rain, but you're not getting wet. It's a way, you know, that By focusing on the heart, we can find relief and peace, and even in the face of tragedy, and bring this to others. And so he has taught yoga and meditation, for decades now. And he has a book called The Stress-Free College Student. He's noticed that 60, 80% of college students are overly burdened with stress, and how we can just making these changes, these focus changes, to get some instant results. He also has another really great accessible definition of meditation. Anything that makes you happy or joyful is meditation. He has a program called Beginning Meditation with Advanced Results, really on that theme. He also talked about meditation can be useful for healing family relationships, and he shared a story of a woman who, just by meditating, actually was then invited to a family picnic when she had been estranged from that family. So if we're struggling with a spouse or a lover or a boss or employee, that we can really switch the focus, that it's not about them. Don't give them your power. That rather than that resistance, that victimhood, that sense that this person controls me, that we can, in fact, step into the leader role. So, I don't care what other people think about me. I will make the best choice for myself. And that this can certainly be difficult at first, but it's like exercise. It's like going to the gym. We can build those heart muscles. We can build those brain thought muscles over time. By doing this regularly. So in terms of, it's about appreciating our self-worth, and we need to develop, he suggests, our inside self-worth spa. He has the best imagery, doesn't he? The research shows that many people feel guilty when they're happy. It's like, there's going to be a recipe for for struggling. So we need to take care of ourselves. Pay attention to what we eat, or going for a walk, or remembering to love ourselves and not get overly wrapped up in what other people are thinking. He suggests taking your best qualities and creating your own superhero. He even does this with children. What are your strong points, and let's make that you a superhero who has that as a special power. It's a really fun way to remember who we are and our capabilities. He reminded us that there's a study that if you look at the 5-10 people closest to you, it tells you something about yourself and who you are by association, and that this is something that you can change. Other different kinds of people I want to bring into my life. So in the morning, he gets up. And we can all do this, and you smile, love myself, I feel grateful, I think of things I'm grateful for, and remind myself that I'm worthy. If you're on your way to a job that you're not fond of, you can think about jobs that you love and start making those shifts. It seems like a small thing, but it's just, as research shows, anything we do for greater than 21 days starts to become a new habit. We can actually, literally in your calendar, schedule joy, right? 7 a.m. to 7:15, joy. And to make it a conscious time, to make it a pampering, to do this daily, to truly make it a priority, and to start to exercise that joy muscle. If you don't have much time, it can be 10 minutes. But he also said, the old story goes, if I meditate or have joy for 10 minutes a day and I'm really stressed out, then I need to put in for an hour a day. we can tend to relegate these things to unintentionally to low priority things, but we can switch that and recognize that by scheduling it in, it's a high priority. It's like gas. We can't say, I have a busy week, I'm so busy, I don't have time to put gas in the car, right? Or I don't have time, I love this example, I don't have time to wait for the apples to ripen, so I'm just going to paint them red and eat them now. He says there are ways where we're a patient. You know, we invest in children, and it doesn't. It's not a sacrifice, and even though it takes decades for that investment to pay off, but well, we can invest in ourselves. We can invest in our health. We can invest in our worth. It doesn't have to happen right away. We talked about you know, how humor can help us. You know, we're not going to be perfect. That's okay, but we can step back and watch and laugh at ourselves. I love, too, that he says, you know, he's not making light of this. It's like, you know, life is hard, he reminds us, even with tips. But we can do this with some consciousness and care. You know, there's a healthy nervousness to things. We're nervous about things because we care. It's okay to make mistakes. Not only that, it can be really good to make mistakes, to fail big and fail faster, you know, to fall 1,000 times. He mentioned he's been studying Aikido with Robert Clancy, who is also a guest in this program. That one of the first things you learn to do in Aikido is how to fall. So we take that fear, that nervousness, and remind ourselves that we're here for joy, not for discomfort. One of the ways that we can help to do this is to switch that inward focus to an outward focus. That it's not all about me. That it's, you know, if I'm struggling, it's like, well, am I reaching out to help other people? And am I doing enough service in the world? Even if that's small things. And remember to, you know, be true to who you are. Be yourself. Be unique. Love yourself. You know, love is a generic word, he reminds us, but that means what are the things for which we have gratitude? These will start, he says, this helps him become calmer and to love himself more. We can, another powerful way to get through is to remember our why. Why are we doing this? Why, you know, what's the point of my job? What's the point of what I do? What's the point of my service? And that can keep us focused. So a solution to these emotional challenges, he says, is to feel your way through. It's an emotional challenge, so we feel those emotions on our way through. And it's okay to not know. It's okay to not understand it all. But if we just feel the feelings, listen to our intuition, listen to our guides and angels, to those better impulses in our we'll get the answers and can appreciate ourselves. And stepping out of self-worth and fear at first is going to be difficult. Because but we can it's okay to fake it. That literally research shows if you fake a smile, that those muscle patterns start an electrochemical change and then an emotional change that catches up with you. So literally you can fake it till you make it. In the meantime, also, you know, reaching out to help others. If we're overwhelmed, if I just don't have time, you know, we can help. We don't have to schedule something. We can help in the midst of our day. You know, just a smile or a handout or a kind word can be a really big help to folks. This is really his focus. Heal your heart. Appreciate and love yourself. People will see that when you do that. It will bring more meaning and purpose to life. And then everything gets easier. He says that joy is our first purpose, self-love. To remember gratitude and celebration. He says a couple of times that we are leaving the age of the Industrial Revolution. We are entering the age of celebration, and that to celebrate ourselves. When we do this, literally, we change the hormonal balance in our bodies, which makes us healthier, which makes us happier. So all this. We can start the negative cycle and start spinning that into a positive direction. If you had a tough week, celebrate that you got through this the week. You know, it's okay to take small steps. Because, and you don't have to do this alone. He stressed the importance of a community that we can support and inspire each other. And certainly Swami is somebody who continually inspires me. I smile every time we talk, and I feel uplifted. You can learn more about his work at orangecowboy.com, and he has a free meditation there that you can download and enjoy to get started. So I had a delightful time, and I'm sure you did as well. So peace, everyone. Remember to love yourselves. Take care for now.